Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
Greetings, everybody. Broadcasting from Huntington Beach, California, and from New York City, coast to coast. As soon as my late co-host Adrian Gruberg logs in, something must have come up over there on the East Coast. Maybe Trump's in town. A big welcome to all my Big Apple and L.A. Listeners out there. And I'm Dave Nassani on the Caregiver Dave Radio Show, coming to you live from the syndicated All Positive Talk Radio Network, HealthyLife.net. Broadcasting in all 50 states and 135 countries with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, from thecaregiverspace.org. And just a reminder that all our shows are available on demand at healthylife.net and our membership website, caregiverdave.com, voted number 2 best podcast of the top 6 podcasts on caring.com. And we just got some new statistics. We are number 1 of the top 50 podcasts on Player FM, caregiver podcast, that is.
And if wow. You're
right, yeah. And if you go right now to caregiverdave.com, better late than never, Adrian.
No, I was here.
Oh, was you? Good for you. And go on caregiverdave.com, our free burnout quiz, as well as my first book about overcoming hardships, unbelievable hardships, not just regular hardships. So do that right now while listening to the show. And we do have an exciting show planned for you today. We will be interviewing Humble the Poet. Yes, he's famous in Canada. Kanwa Mal is a Canadian-born rapper, spoken word artist, slam poet. Right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Internationally best, or slam reader, what is it?
Slam poet.
Slam poet, I had it right. Internationally best-selling author and former elementary school teacher. Now, if that's not a combination, I don't know what is. And with a wildly popular blog of over 100,000 monthly readers, real readers. And he's had more than 930,000, that would be over or almost a million, social
almost
media
a million.
Followers. And his first edition, we're going to have a party when he hits a million. And his first edition of Unlearn is a Globe and Mail bestseller. Originally did it self-published, and they picked it up. He's performed at concerts and festivals, including Lollapalooza, if I said that right, and has been featured in major media, including BuzzFeed and Huffington Post. Wow. What an amazing guest. I want to, first of all, take this opportunity to thank my last week's guest, Joan Markwell, the grief expert. And you can hear that interview and all our interviews on HealthyLife.net and our membership website, CaregiverDave.com. All right, enough of that. Humble, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wow. We've never had a guest like you before. But I like to ask my guests to take a minute or two and just tell us, who is Humble the Poet and why was he put on this earth?
Humble the Poet is a multidisciplined artist. I love bringing ideas to life, and currently I'm bringing ideas to life through the mediums of music, visual arts, fashion, film, as well as literature. So, you know, talking about my book on Learn, it's quite a bit of things I've been able, very fortunate to do. I've been on this journey for the last 10 years after I left my former life as an elementary school teacher. And I think it's just an evolution of me wanting to be a lifelong learner and needing things.
That is another life, elementary school teacher. So make sure we explore every facet of you, because I don't want to leave one unturned, you know. And so, first of all, you're from parents of India immigrants, right?
Yeah, my parents emigrated from India in the 70s, yeah.
And you were born here in this country?
I was born in Canada, yes, in the 80s.
Oh, in that country, you know.
Yeah, to the north.
To the north. I got the good passport.
So let's talk about... you know, you talk about cutting yourself some slack. You talk about how living up to your expectations of others or ourselves can actually hold us back. go down that road. Let's hear about this, because this is stuff caregivers need to hear. Who would ever think that a caregiver, Adrian, can learn something from a rapper and a poet?
Yeah, I would.
We had a poet.
Well, I
think
we got to remember too, though. I think you know, hip hop and rap. That's the evolution of literary art. So I mean, people got to recognize that rappers are more talented than Shakespeare in my eyes.
That's true. Shakespeare was a rapper, probably.
On the spot.
He definitely was, and you know, he rhymed and he told stories, and I think it was beautiful that he did it.
Yeah. Kill the Attorneys. That was a good one.
Yeah. We you know, we all have voices in our head, and a lot of those voices came from those who raised us, and those voices really get in the way when we try to create the life that we want. And we, you know, we go on social media and compare ourselves to other people when we see them, and then identify gaps in our own lives and start to feel, you know, feel low and go hard on ourselves. And what we're not realizing is, you know, we're kind of sabotaging ourselves. We're really doing a lot to keep ourselves from living the type of lives that we want to live. And especially in a world, you know, on this side of the pond, where, you know, being productive and getting as much done as possible is such a priority, nothing ever feels like it's enough. Even if we're doing so much and we're doing plenty, we don't feel like we're doing enough. So, you know, I encourage people to cut themselves slack. And in my journey, you know, when you become self-employed, it's you're sitting there trying to figure out what you're doing and how to make money and how to get people to pay attention to you. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're like, you compare yourself to somebody who's 10 years deeper into the game and seeing all these gaps with what you're doing. And you got to cut yourself some slack. Everybody is starting wherever they're starting. Some people have advantages over others. This is how the world has always been. It's never been an even playing field. And the more we respect the reality of that, the better equipped we are to deal with it.
Yeah. That's good advice.
And translation to caregivers who are burned out, you know, sit down, write some poetry, become a rapper, you know, read.
Write it out.
Learn to rest, not quit.
And get it out of you.
Because
if it's in you, it can't help anybody. What was the thing you said?
I said, caregivers, but everybody in general, we need to learn to rest and not quit. Sometimes we go too heavy and then we burn out. Instead, learn to take breaks. Learn to take a rest. Think of the marathon, not the sprint. And you know, that applies to being an entrepreneur. That applies to being an artist. That applies to marriage. That applies to being a caregiver. It's, you know, the baby steps will add up. You can't have it all figured out overnight. And you know, take care of yourself. If you don't have a flame left, then you're of no use to anybody else.
And expectations is a biggie. You know, caregivers are trying to meet the one they're caring for expectations. It's a thankless job. You know, they get criticized. They usually don't get thanked. And so, can you get me this? Can you get me that? Because they don't put boundaries in their life. Mm-hmm. And so how do they get over that feeling of the perfectionistic and, you know, I have to meet all their needs and when helping you hurts me, what do they do about that?
I think a lot of it stems from when we were younger, and we just, as kids, we always assumed that adults had it all figured out and they never made any mistakes. And, you know, probably because many of our parents never took the time to say, I'm sorry, and show us their flaws. And by the time we recognized their flaws, we were adults ourselves and resenting them for it. And I think what happens is we don't have control over making other people happy, but we do have a lot of control over managing our expectations. You know, being unhappy, simply put, is when the ideas in your head don't match the ideas in front of you. You know, you want it to be one way and you look at the world and it's another way, so you're unhappy. The problem is so many of us waste our energy trying to change the world when really what we need to do is change our attitude and our expectations.
Oh my gosh, you are so wise.
Yes.
So well put. See, I'm writing a book now, Dave's Hammock Wisdom, 99 Lessons Learned Living Life. I have a rival here, Adrian. This guy is pretty wise. Because I'm known for my wisdom over the years, because I lay on my hammock and I solve the world's problems, solve my own problems, solve my family's problems. Anyway, enough about me. This is about you. Discovering what really matters to us, but unleashing the things that don't. Talk about that.
You know, in my own journey, you know, I kept thinking I had to learn new things, add new things to my life. I had to gain more and more and more matters. And I mean, and it's a cultural thing out here in North America. Like, you know, the biggest religion out here is buy stuff, be happy. And
it's never enough.
Materialism.
Materialism, but it's not even just materialism. It's like status, it's followers, it's likes, it's audience, it's everything. And what I realized as I was getting kind of chewed up and spit out by the entertainment industry and everything else was, hey, I didn't need to gain more things to be successful. I need to let go of a lot of old ideas and old beliefs and old values. And the moment I started letting go of things, I started feeling a lot lighter and I had a lot more room to learn. And I think we, you know, as I said, that's the whole premise behind the book Unlearn, is to gain more from letting go. And when life feels heavy, instead of adding to it, you know, let's learn to let go of some of it. And that requires us to do some internal auditing and figure out what's important to us and what's really not important to us. So often we do things because it's important to other people and not us.
Wow. Yeah, that's so true. The chips on our shoulders, you know, that's an old expression. Hey, get that chip off your shoulder. You don't hear too many people say that these days, but I'm glad it's coming back. And how letting go can give us more. Right. Yeah. There's an old saying in the 70s, you know, whatever you there was a bumper sticker says, if you love something, let it go. And it was meant to come back.
Right?
Oh, that's where it was. Yes. And there was another bumper sticker to counter that one says, if you love something, hunt it down and shoot it. You know, and even the Bible says, you know, if you grab too tightly on the things you want, you'll find that it just slips through your fingers the way sand does. So speak about that.
I think, again, it's. You know, the chips on our shoulders, sometimes when we're younger, we feel the need to prove something and we never kind of update the narrative in our own lives. So, you know, for me, my father was a cab driver. He came to this country. He had a master's degree, but he couldn't use any of his education.
Wow.
It wasn't acknowledged here unless he did like 5 more years of schooling. So he became a cab driver. And I remember being like 5 years old and he got attacked. You know, he was robbed and attacked. And, you know, seeing his face all cut and bruised up, you know, I had a certain, it created a chip on my shoulder where I needed to, you know, prove his sacrifices right. I needed to make something of myself in the world. I needed to smash that cab. I needed to beat up all the racists. I need to do all these different things and, you know, let that be my fuel. But the reality is that's not sustainable. Proving people wrong is not sustainable. I mean, it does come in handy once in a while, but in the long run, if you're in it for the long run, you know, proving people right, chasing your authentic enthusiasms and your passions are going to last a lot longer than simply continually challenging a moment of trauma. And often the chips on our shoulders come from that. You know, it's a, you know, I caught myself, you know, again, being young, growing up in a country that I was born in, but everybody thinks I wasn't born here. You deal with a lot of racism. And then you want to find a situation where you're like, hey, how do I get that validation now? Oh, look. You know, I'm getting more popular. Maybe I should start modeling. Maybe I should see how many girls I can get. And realizing that I'm not doing any of this to better my life. I'm just doing this to make up for a past that no longer exists anyways. And,
filling,
you know,
yourself
helping people
up.
Yeah, filling yourself up with stuff that you never needed in the first place just because you had an unhealthy childhood that just needed to get revisited, you know. And that was the big thing for me. So, you know, realizing that, you know, where do the chips on our shoulders come from? And let's not devote the rest of our lives to living in the past or making up for a past, because that past isn't here anymore.
Wow. So finding purpose through serving and building a community. You know, caregivers, there are communities called support groups, because a lot of times they can't make it unless they are surrounded by people who are going through what they're going through, their pain that they're going through. To let them know that, you know, this is, hey, I've been doing this 22 years and there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Don't give up. Don't kill yourself. Don't go crazy. And talk about that.
I think what we end up doing is when we have challenging times, it's so easy and convenient to feel sorry for ourselves. And self-pity, to me, you know, all humans need to feel connected. We all have that need for connection. And what we may not realize, though, is self-pity is like the fast food version of that. It's quick, it's easy, it's convenient.
And it feels good.
It feels good, just like eating at McDonald's. You know, in the first 5 minutes, it feels great and it's easy.
And then it doesn't.
And it's the same thing with self-pity. What we end up doing is we create a connection with ourselves saying, hey, nobody understands what I'm going through but me. And what we don't realize is we're isolating ourselves from other people. And what we actually need is real connection, and more sustainable connection, a healthier connection. And That comes through building communities, and that comes through being a little bit vulnerable and sharing our stories with other people. Because the reality is we're all in the same boat. Even if we're not all caregivers, we're all dealing with the same struggles. We all have the same anxieties towards our future. We all have the same regrets towards our past. We all have a lot of expectations that don't get met. We all have a bunch of promises that somebody put into our head that don't get fulfilled, and it leaves us in a level of dread. And I think when we start sharing this with each other, we're like, whoa, I'm not the only one. And we can build a community and share best practices, whether it's in the caregiver community, whether it's in, you know, just your local community. You know, we all have so much in common, and all we have to do is open ourselves up. And it just takes us to take that first step to share.
Yep.
Wow. This is amazing, Adrian.
Yep.
After the break, we're going to have him share some of his poetry with us.
Ooh,
see? We got five more minutes to the break, just to warn you, it's coming. So, Humble the Poet's Journey, right? A child of immigrants becoming an artist and his experience entering the realm of Hollywood. Tell us about Hollywood. That's got to be an education, huh?
Yeah, so I started when I was in Toronto. When I started in Toronto, I was just putting music up on YouTube and, you know, releasing one song every couple of months. And I was working as a teacher and everything was fine and dandy. And it was just a great way to, you know, scratch an artistic itch, great way to meet the ladies, great way to, you know, be able to crash a party and people knew who I was. It was simple and my ambitions were small. And then slowly, as you know, opportunities came my way. You know, somebody would be like, hey, we'll fly you out to Fresno, California and perform. Or, hey, you know, come to this festival. And slowly just different opportunities came. You know, I had to kind of look at it from a more of a serious lens. And I had a community in Toronto of different artists. And another friend of mine, they were taking comedy very serious at the time. So we would start going out to L.A., splitting an Airbnb, and I would focus on, you know, trying to make things happen in the music world out there. They would focus on making things happen in the comedy world, and both of us using YouTube kind of as our platform to share our work and kind of to bypass the gatekeepers. And it became an interesting journey. You know, their comedy did very well, and they made a permanent move out there. And I think through that process, I kind of realized that that city was definitely not for me. It's a great place. It definitely teaches every artist how to mix commerce and creativity and find the different options and the different ways to make a living. But I also felt like, you know, it'd be better for me to learn that stuff and bring it home, because, you know, I'm from one of the most multicultural and amazing cities to have ever existed in humanity. And it's on its own, it's having its own moment for the last 10 years in the creative world. I mean, the Raptors just won the championship. The city's becoming world class.
Wow.
Google's building a little mini city in Toronto. Like, we're really, you know, so for what I realized was, instead of me trying to be a very, very, very small fish in a massively old pond known as Los Angeles and Hollywood, I'm like, hey, I can actually come to Toronto and start digging the pond.
Right.
You know, not even be the big fish. I can start digging it and educating the next generation of artists and let them know.
You could be the owner of the pond.
Yeah, I could, and I mean, and guys that look like me in Toronto get a seat at the table. You know, that's still not happening in LA. And it's, you know, and it's a reality that I got to deal with and work with. And you know, the future, and I represent the future and what the world is turning into. So seeing the challenge, so what I realize is it's in all worlds, you know, there's three levels. You can view other people as your competition. You can choose to cooperate with them, or you can choose to collaborate with them. And what I realized was, you know, in my early years, anybody else doing it, we all just saw each other as competition. We didn't know what we were doing. And then you get to Hollywood, everybody cooperates. It's out of a mutual benefit. Everybody, you know, I'll benefit from this transaction. You'll benefit. Let's just do it. But I hungered for collaboration. And collaboration to me is when everybody involved is working on something bigger than themselves. And I wasn't finding that in Hollywood too much. And there are pockets. There's some amazingly talented people there. But the environment and the industry itself dictates that you got to get as much as you can, as quick as you can, because somebody else has just moved from their small town and they're here in the big leagues now. You got to make it happen. Just chasing you. And then, so I learned a lot of work ethic. I learned a lot about how to earn as a creative. And I learned a lot about, you know, taking things to that next level and not just simply staying in Toronto and stunting my growth. So I travel back and forth between all of them. And my favorite quote is Los Angeles is undefeated. And I remind myself that you can't take anything personal when you go there, because that's how the city existed before I was born. That's how the city is going to be after I pass. So, you know, respect the nature of what it is. And that's a big lesson I always try to promote to people, is just, hey, understand the nature of your environment and stop, you know, stop creating a lot of unnecessary tension when you want to change it to a way that it never was going to be.
Yeah, you know, that's synergy. The definition of synergy is the sum total of the parts are greater than the parts themselves. And you know, we're all serving for a greater purpose and a greater work.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Los Angelians maybe don't always feel that way. They're all, you know, what's in it for me? What's in it for you? You know, how is working with you going to make me better? You know,
I mean, it is a great lesson in human nature. I think it's an important lesson. When you communicate with people, you should definitely let them know, make them a stakeholder and let them know how this is going to impact or benefit them, and stop, you know, and I've been able to do that to help other people get their projects across. I have a friend right now who's doing PSAs for this rare lung disease that her father has. And, you know, and the first draft of her script was pulling on people's heartstrings to get them to care. And then, you know, after doing some rewrites, we're like, hey, the bigger point here is to remind people that anybody can get it. Mm-hmm. And that anybody can get this lung disease, and we don't even have effective tools to measure or detect it. So now you got people caring about it because it may impact them. And that's not the most romantic thought, but it's realistic. And, you know, it's, and I learned that from LA. You know, you have to, you know, don't appeal to people's hearts, appeal to their self-interest. And, you know, eventually they'll evolve from it too. They'll live a life where they only live for themselves and feel the emptiness. And eventually they'll find the value in service and collaboration and thinking in terms of abundance instead of scarcity. But everyone comes to that realization on their own time.
Well, listen, it's time for a break. Why don't we take a break and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Welcome, caregivers. Thank you so much for finding your way to our community of loving and supportive caregivers. We as caregivers understand and know the day-to-day feelings of guilt, fear, and loneliness. But guess what? There is hope. I, Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, along with my team of experts and caring caregivers, have made this site just for you. We are a community of caregivers that understands and supports you wherever you are in your journey. We are a place to connect with other caregivers, but more importantly, a place to get practical, actionable help. There are lots of ways for you to get support. First of all, you can download our welcome pack. This will get you started on your Thrive journey. Next, you can ask and get answers to your questions by posting them here in our private Facebook groups. You can also get live online support by attending one of our live weekly Connect webinars. You can get practical, actionable advice by listening to our weekly podcast. You can hear and read other stories about other caregivers' experiences. Plus, add your own in our weekly Share Your Story forum, posted every Tuesday in the Facebook group. You can access essential resources and download practical Thrive Solutions packs, all of which are geared to help you thrive as a caregiver. We know funds are tight, so we offer all of our individual Thrive Solutions packs. Or for even a better deal, you can get lifetime access to all of our resources. Again, we are here to support you and help you thrive and to enjoy your life as a caregiver. And remember, this is a place to get hope, not just cope.
And we're back with our guest, Humble the Poet. Kanwar Mal, a Canadian-born rapper, spoken word, artist, poet, internationally best-selling author, just an amazing guy, my gosh. And Adrian Gruberg, our co-host, and I'm Dave, the caregiver, Dave Nassani. And you talked about comedy. Did you try comedy at all? You look like you could be a funny guy if you wanted to be.
I mean, there's a lot of brevity in my work. I mean, even in the book, there's a lot of comedy. You know, I'm a straight talker, and I mean my
and a straight shooter.
Straight shooter, and my hero, and my unofficial guru is George Carlin. I feel like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you look like a George Carlin.
Yeah.
I'm quite literally also.
Yeah. I mean, I probably model myself after him. So, and I mean, you're sitting there at a comedy show and it doesn't even feel like comedy sometimes the way he does it. So I take a lot from him. And when life gets heavy, I just turn on one of his specials and it just melts all the tension away. So comedy to me is just the brilliant mix of honesty and intelligence. You know, you can tell somebody the truth in a way that doesn't, you know, cause existential dread. So I include a lot of comedy in my music. I include it in my work. I have some, you know, some of my most popular videos on YouTube are comedy based, you know, and sometimes that's the only way you can make the truth digestible. So it gives someone something to laugh at, even if it's themselves.
Did your friends ever talk you into going and doing a 3 or 4 minute set at a comedy club on open night? Open mic night or anything?
I mean, the irony of that was I loved going to those open mic nights, especially when I was a starving artist, because it'd be 2 hours of entertainment for $4 at the comedy clubs here in downtown Toronto. And
but do you participate?
I never participated in the interesting was I had mentioned it to somebody who was a comedian who didn't know me, and they made it into like a big pep talk where they thought I was just scared. You know, they thought I was like too scared to go on stage and do it. And I'm like, no, I spend a lot of time on stage. Even when I perform music, I'll talk for about 15 minutes between songs, and I drop a lot of comedy that way. I feel like I'm a big fan of the freedom, the comedians who have freedom of speech, who still have it. I mean, they can make the inappropriate jokes and things are in context. I don't know if that exists anymore. Someone pulls out their phone, they record half a joke, post it on the internet, and everybody gets offended. but I definitely, like, I don't get offended. I don't think people should get offended in general. So you can tell the type of comedy that I love because of that. Yeah. But maybe one day, but I incorporate a lot of comedy into my work, so I think it's already there. And I mean, I'm also...
Well, it's an amazing experience. I mean, I did it for the first time in my life. I've been wanting to do it for like 20 years, but for whatever reason, I never did. But I had an opportunity at the Harvard Club of New York, just off Broadway, so I told everybody I'm having my comedy set debut off Broadway at the Harvard Club of New York, and I did 4 minutes, and they laughed. You know, but
you gotta keep working on the material. That's
yeah, got to keep working on the material. It's all about the material.
Well, my buddy James Altucher, he owns Stand Up New York.
Oh, really?
Manhattan, so on like 76th. And
hey, we'll get together.
Yep.
Yeah, he's offered me use of his club for anything that I want to use it for.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and he's just
a club.
It's a great club, yeah. Yeah, so
Adrian knows all those places.
Yeah.
So I feel like
Carolyn's too.
Carolyn's is a good one as well. Yeah. So it's I'm a huge fan either way. I mean, I feel like I could probably go up and just make stuff up.
Oh, you'd kill it. You'd kill it.
We can do that.
It's just another thing to round you, you know?
Yeah, add to the list of the
another notch
right
on your resume.
Yeah, so my introductions get even longer.
Yeah. How often do you get to New York?
I've been averaging maybe about once every other month.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah, and how about LA, where you stay away from LA now?
No. I spend a lot. I probably spend about 40% of my life in LA.
You do a lot of traveling.
I travel quite a bit.
You're not just stuck in Toronto, greatest city as it is.
I need to be though. So my goal is, I mean, I'm flying to Portland in 2 days, and then coming back, and then flying to New York for a week, and then coming back. But then traveling is amazing and fantastic, and I'm so blessed to do it. But it's not good if you're trying to eat healthy. It's not good if you're trying to get regular sleep, and it's not good if you're trying to just stay in shape. And I realize that. And I mean, I'm on a plane all the time, so I want to stay in one place for the summer and see if I can make some progress.
Well, you have about 2.5 minutes. Yeah, is that enough time to like do one or two poems or?
What I'll do is I have this one poem that I actually wrote about my dad and his whole story about, you know, being the cabbie, and I call it Life of an Immigrant, and it's kind of in his honor, and it's a funny one because he had no reaction when I performed it for him, that's him. He's in that space.
He's a comedian too.
he's a comedian in his own right. He's a great guy.
Straight man.
Straight, very straight. So I'll perform that, and then I mean, it's definitely not comedy, but I'll perform it and get an idea and a flavor of what spoken word poetry can be, and yeah, we'll take it from there. So they told them the grass was greener, with an endless flood of possibilities. Katrina, watch him drown in debt. Land confiscated by the local government, so he flies high in a jet plane. Plain clothes just exposed him to the harsh winters of life, and his wife won't know about the sweat soaked in the bankroll. Sent home, boy getting grown, he starts to groan. Stomach's rumbling. Hungry for a better life, now he's stumbling over foreign phonetics and those verb tenses. They're laughing at his accent. It's not an accident, though, that his master's in economics is an honor. Most economic for a father to hop his ass in a cab and never bother getting out. That car or his dreams, memorize the route and collect the fare. It isn't fair when they say you don't belong here with that long beard and that towel around your head. Hear what was said. Soak in the hate. Can you relate? Life of an immigrant.
Wow. That was very moving.
Thank you.
You got another one?
I don't think I have anything else with nice language. It might be a little bit longer, so I'm going to leave it at that.
I thought you weren't a gangster rapper.
You know what? I'm not a gangster rapper, but when you do get passionate about things, the bad language still comes out. Yeah. Still get riled up. So I've talked about, you know.
We're rated G here.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't have anything else that's language friendly.
All right. Well, let's take a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver, on sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com.
And we're back with Conwar Mal, the poet, and Adrian Gruberg. And I'm Dave Nassani, and we're talking about your book. Let's talk about your book, Unlearn. Why did you write it? What's it about, and what do you hope to accomplish with it?
When I was at the most challenging parts of my life, and you know, I had left my job to become a full-time musician. I thought I had a record deal. I thought I was working with some really, you know, above-board people, and it all came crashing down. And what ended up happening was, while I thought I had money coming in through this record deal, I started, you know, I left my job. I was living off a credit card, living off lines of credit. I just put myself in a bunch of debt. And then it all just went away. Everybody that I was working with disappeared, and you know, I guess the right word would be bamboozled. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't some big Ponzi scheme. It was just people trying to make things happen. They couldn't make it happen. Instead of having a conversation, they just disappeared.
Profiting and off of your dreams.
Exactly. I think they recognized the talent, but they didn't have the means to.
Common really story.
And now looking back, it's probably an essential thing that I went through. And I found myself feeling sorry for myself. I laid in bed. And I started taking, you know, all the wrong types of medications to make myself feel better. I was blaming everybody except myself. I was blaming friends for not warning me. I was blaming the people who I felt betrayed me. I was blaming life. I was blaming everybody. And I was hoping, you know, I was in $80,000 debt. And I was hoping somebody was going to – and I had no job. I had no way of earning an income. And I thought, you know, someone's going to come in and just, you know, a white knight's going to save the day. And, you know, after 2 weeks of laying in bed and doing absolutely nothing, the white knight never arrived. The cavalry never came. And I had to get up and I had to take ownership. And when I took ownership, that's when things started to change. I started taking responsibility. And I recognized that, hey, my problems may not all be my fault, but my problems are all my responsibility. You know, I might not be the reason I'm here, but I'm here now and I got to deal with it. And it's nobody else's problem. Everybody has their own stuff they got to deal with. And I spent the next 4 years clawing my way out, of debt, clawing my way out of the depression and the hole I felt and the blame that I put on everybody else and the resentment that I held. And when I used to read inspirational quotes from other people, it just felt so fluffy and light. And, you know, other self-help gurus were just promising you the world for no work. And I saw the scam in it. It was just, you know, sell you something big and make it convenient. And I needed something real. I had real mortgage payments to make. I had real problems. I had real anxiety. I had lost 25 pounds. And if you guys can see me, I don't have weight. I don't have weight to lose.
You don't have that to lose.
Yeah, it's funny. I've actually saved it. Like I'm like 170 right now, and I actually saved this picture. I can show you guys right here of my scale. It's 144.
Wow. Good looking feet, by the way.
Yeah. Good looking feet. And, but I keep that as a reminder, just like, you know, things got really bad and I went to a really dark place and I had to look inside to find everything that I needed to get in a better spot. And all those conversations I had with myself is the book. And what it was, I started sharing those conversations on Facebook. I just write stuff out. And I share them on Facebook. And then the top comments would always be like, wow, it's like you're living in my head. Wow, you're telling my story. Wow,
reading
I need
my
to
mail.
Hear this today. Yeah, I need to hear this today. We're all in the same boat.
More than we have in common than people think.
Exactly.
Everybody thinks their problems are unique until somebody really spells it out for them.
Yeah,
we have more in common than we don't.
Exactly. And me being, you know, I was an elementary school teacher. I'm a poet. I can put things together in words very well. So I help people articulate their own feelings. And eventually they're like, hey, you should write a book. And I was like, I don't know how to write a book. And then it was my community that showed me crowdfunding. My community showed me self-publishing. They showed me everything. They taught me how to use Adobe InDesign to build a book. And I did it all with their support. And I crowdfunded the book. And I raised about $26,000 from 300 people. It's ironic. You, from your sweatshirt, my biggest contributor was a Harvard professor that I'd never met.
Is that right?
Yeah, and he gave me about $1,500, and he said, I just like seeing artists that are taking business into their own hands. And you know, that was the turning point for me. When and it all happened because I admitted I needed help. I admitted I didn't know what I was doing. When people ask me to do things, I'm like, hey, I don't know how to write a book. I don't know how to do any of this. And what came from all of that was Unlearn. And then Unlearn was published originally in 2014 independently. And I would still go around touring and doing music. And then instead of selling, you know, t-shirts, I sold my book. Mm-hmm. And then the more people that got the book, the more people liked me for the book because, you know, more people read books than listen to hip-hop.
This is when it was self-published, right?
This one was self-published, and it was a paperback, and I just would have boxes shipped to wherever I was performing and, you know, take the gig for free and sell the book to make some money. And, you know, people found value in the book, and then a few years later, 2017, the biggest bookstore in Canada hit me up and said, hey, we found out you had a book. We'd love to republish it and put it on our shelves. And I was like, sure, what do you guys need from me? They're like, just email us the file. So I emailed them the file, and then it became an instant bestseller the first week it released.
Fantastic.
And, it was a bestseller in Canada for 9 months. And then after that, I started doing well in other places. And then HarperCollins from the United States called. And then we just republished in the United States on April 9th.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a five-year journey. It's like you plant a seed, and it grows when it grows.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm wearing this because I'm going to speak at the Harvard Club of Boston in 2 more days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm actually a USC graduate.
Okay.
But, you know, that's the way that goes. Don't be afraid to chase your dream, right? Let's talk about caregivers lose their dreams, if they ever had one to begin with, right? Because they think they've just been sentenced to caregiver prison with no possibility of parole, you know, and they were just locked up and thrown away the key, and they lost their friends. They stopped socializing. Now they're isolated. They're not eating right. They're not sleeping right. They're just a mess. And when you talk about their dream, they say, no, my dream is dead, man. How do you keep your dream from dying?
I think, realizing that we all need something to look forward to in life, no matter who we are. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much is in our bank account. what we got going on. If we don't have something to look forward to, then we're not going to be excited to get out of bed. And, you know,
don't lose that vision.
Don't lose that vision. And obviously, you know, real life, you know, comes in the way and it throws a lot of curveballs. And that doesn't mean you have to abandon things. That may just mean you have to extend your timeline and stretch it out. And maybe something that you thought you can get done in 5 years may take 15. Yeah. That's okay. And the irony of it is, you know, some of the things that you said that caregivers say, I've heard people say that who aren't caregivers.
Sure.
You know, I've heard people say that who are parents, or I've heard people who say that who are just afraid of their own parents. It's like, well, my parents want me to do this and I want to do this. I'm just going to keep them happy. They've already been through enough. Let me just make them happy. It's like, look, man, if you live for other people in the long run, you're going to end up resenting them.
Right. And they think it's an easier path, but it's not.
It's definitely not. And I think we'll be more energized when we feed our souls first. And again, it's the age-old analogy of, you know, put your mask on first in the airplane so you can be of use to somebody else. It's fill up your cup first so you can share the overflow. But it's the simple idea that, hey, you might find some significance in being a martyr, but that's not sustainable. And instead, find significance being useful, and not only be useful to other people, but be useful to yourself. And you're taking care of somebody, but have a conversation with them and let them know who you are. Because if your flame burns out, then you're not good to them either.
Yeah. Do they listen when you tell people this?
Sometimes they don't. I mean, I think my policy is have the conversation once. The ones that listen, keep them in their lives. The ones that don't, just wish them the best and move on.
My experience, most of them do not listen. And then you see them again next year. Hey, how's that problem going? Oh, man, it got worse. I said, well, did you do what I tell you to do? No.
Well, I actually have a quote in the book where I say, if you don't take the necessary steps to improve your life, then your misery is not only guaranteed, it's probably deserved.
Yeah, and of course the old saying, we're saying a lot of old cliches here, but insanity, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So
Exactly.
Well, listen, we're up on another break, so we'll be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available everywhere.
And we're back with Kanwa Mal, an amazing poet, amazing rapper, amazing reader, slam reader. I don't know. I got these.
Slam poet. Right.
Slam poet. Okay. Yeah. And he did a little reading for us in the last segment, but he doesn't have any more that are clean. So,
I mean, even the book isn't clean.
Even the book isn't clean. Well,
yeah,
you know,
there's inappropriate language in the book as well. Sometimes you got to be straight. You know, yeah, it's got to be wrong.
Sometimes you know, you need a little profanity to slap you in the face to get your attention. You know,
exactly. I'm not in the business of sugarcoating.
Selfish, you know, I was going to entitle my third book, The Selfish Caregiver, but everyone said, no, you can't do that. Selfish is such a negative word, you know. And I said, okay, so I named it, It's My Life to Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity by Learning When to Say Yes and When to Say No. It wasn't until I talked at TEDx a few months ago that their whole philosophy is don't promote yourself. We don't want to hear about who you are and what you've done. Just tell us, share an idea worth spreading.
Yeah.
And so I told him what I did. Okay, you know what? We came up with the idea that caregivers need to be selfish in order to survive. He says, that's perfect. That's great. We love it. Everyone else hated it, but they loved it, so we went with it. And, you know, that's how I feel, because caregivers are so selfless, the opposite of selfish, that they need to bring that pendulum back more than halfway just to get some balance. And that's what they don't understand, you know, that if even the Bible says, love others the way you love yourself. Well, a lot of people don't even love themselves. How are they going to love others?
Exactly, yeah. That ends up being very, that could be, if people actually took that literally, it'd be very destructive because we generally love others more than we love ourselves.
Yeah, and caregivers at least have to value their life, I say more, but if that's too hard for them, then say at least value your life equal to your loved one. Yeah. So that, you know, sometimes they win, sometimes you win, but they just can't keep winning all the time, or you are going to burn out. So what do you got to say about selfish?
I think people have to realize, like, it's not selfish to put yourself first, especially if you're in a position of service and people depend on you. Then you have to make sure that, you know, all your engines are firing off on all pistons. You got to make sure you're oiled up and you're fueled up and you're good to go.
Even if that's the very definition of being selfish, putting yourself first, but that's not bad.
Well, I think the actual definition of selfish is expecting other people to put you first. I think that's a lot more selfish versus putting yourself first.
Other people to put you first.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think take care of yourself, take care of people you care about. Don't expect other people to put you first. That's selfish.
I see.
Right.
Because other people got their own stuff that they got to deal with.
Did I tell you this guy is wise, Adrian? Wow. It's like Solomon, right? Two women brought Solomon the baby. They said, you know, one baby is dead because she rolled over him, and then they swapped him, and, you know, she says it's mine. I say it's mine. And Solomon says, well, bring me a knife. I'll cut him in half. And the one who was the real mother says, no, 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 don't do that. Let her have it. And he says, give her the baby, because only a mother would do that. So, I mean, that's wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, it comes from time, and I think that's the thing, especially if you're an entrepreneur. You know, I had to say no a lot. You know, you have to say no a lot to stuff. When I was in my struggling phases and friends wanted to go to Cancun for a bachelor party, or so-and-so was having a party on the weekend, you're like, I have to work. You know, I'm in a position where if I don't work, I don't earn. You know, I don't have a day job anymore. I don't have a salary coming in. I don't have anything. Mm-hmm. My results are directly related to my efforts. And even when I put in the effort, I don't get results. So I don't have time to, or the money, or the energy to spend on some of these things. And people are like, well, you know, that's not cool. This is that. And you have to just realize that, hey, a lot of people use guilt and shame as weapons to kind of control us. And, you know, they tell us, oh, you're being selfish. Oh, you're being this, you're being that. And I think it's important for people to realize, no, like, don't listen to this guilt and this shame that's coming your way. And, you know, there are people that will understand that. And, you know, I always tell every single friend who's in the entrepreneurial world and the artist world, I go, busy is a blessing. If you're too busy to hang out with me, just let me know. As long as you communicate it with me, I don't have an issue with it. And, you know, because I've been in their shoes, I get it. And I think it's very often, it's the same thing with caregivers. You got to realize that, hey, the person you were taking care of needs to be taken care of, so they understand that you also need to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a person may not be able to be there for you physically, but they can still be there for you emotionally. They might be able to be there for you just to give you company, give you some time off. And I think, you know, it's going to come with having conversations. Not all those conversations are going to be comfortable, but you have them now and you avoid a lot of heartache later.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you say something that sounds really strange, almost incorrect, but what? I don't think so. It's what? We all have reasons to feel miserable, right?
Yeah.
Explain that.
At some point in each of our lives, we got this idea that there's somebody else out there who's eternally happy, and they're living happily ever after, and they experience nothing but euphoria and bliss. And that's not the truth. The truth is every single human being on this planet has a reason to be miserable. They're going through some challenges.
They're all dealing with something. Nobody is problem-free.
Nobody is problem-free. Definitely some people have it better than others, but even the people who have it better than others, most likely those are just people who get to choose their problems, but they're not problem-free. As well, it's just existence in itself. You know, the human experience comes with misery. It comes with challenges, both physical and mental. And these are challenges that are inevitabilities. You know, you can't simply have a positive quote and make it all go away. You know, if somebody has arthritis or a lower back pain or cancer, like, this stuff is real. This is part of the human experience. And we don't have to, you know, dip it in sugar and make it seem like it's okay. You know, we can have a better attitude towards it, but that attitude can still be grounded in realism and not in some fluffy, you know, BS. And I think, so for me, to tell people, like, it's okay to be miserable. You do have reasons to be miserable. And once you acknowledge those, because the next line in the book is you all also have reasons to be grateful.
Yeah, true.
You know, and I think when we take ownership of our misery, then we can also take ownership of the reasons we have to be grateful. And I think what it is we're told, don't feel miserable, don't complain, just be grateful. And instead of, like, no, how about you just do both? How about you be happy, or you're unhappy that it's raining today, but you are happy that you'll have green grass, and you can go both ways.
So wise, so
be
wise.
Be real.
I am such a wiser man today because I heard you on the radio. So how do we get this book so that we can get even more wisdom?
Unlearn, it's available everywhere, so they can probably
everywhere.
Deeply discounted on Amazon right now, so just look up Humble the Poet, Unlearn. I'm on the shelves at Barnes & Noble. I'm at your independent bookstores. Support your independent bookstores. They should have it. They don't have it, ask them why they don't, and encourage them to get it.
Of course.
Yeah, but I'm with the publishers, so the publishers have put it everywhere. So it's also available in audiobook. So if reading is not your jam, you can find it.
Did you read it yourself?
Of course I read it myself. I'm a recording artist. So
it's his rhythm.
So I spent
comedy guy, too, as well.
And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more comedy in the audiobook. I kind of go off script a little bit sometimes with that. So if you want a different experience, you know, go on Audible, get the audiobook, and it's also available on Kindle. So the book's available.
If they want to get a hold of you and pick your brain, you have an email or?
They can find me on social media at humblethepoet.com.
Is that your real name, Humble?
Humble the Poet. Well, I mean, Humble is what everybody calls me now because nobody can pronounce my first name.
What is your first name?
Gungor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so my legal name.
I was going to say, if they named you Humble, you know, you become your name and you seem like a
self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, I mean, but it's also not very humble to call yourself Humble, but I mean, that name... That name came up a long time ago before I ever thought I'd be in this position that I'm in.
In the book of Torah, Adrian, that it says Moses was the most humble man that ever lived, and yet who wrote the book of Exodus? It was Moses.
Moses, yeah. Exactly.
So that was very humble of him. Well,
that's
Adrian, how do we get a hold of you, Adrian?
It's Adrian at thecaregiverspace.org. And thecaregiverspace.org is the website. The Caregiver Space is the Facebook page.
And I'm Dave Nassani. It's simple. CaregiverDave.com. Just check it out. Get some free gifts. We're giving away free gifts on our website. And I am so excited to say goodbye to my guest because he has really enlightened me, and I'm sure he's enlightened Adrian. So thank you so much.
You were a
great guest. One of the ones that's way up there, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you never knew it by looking at you, but you're a great guy. Backhanded compliment, right?
Why would you know that by looking at him?
I feel like my beard is long enough.
He looks so unusual, you know? Here's a guy.
What happens on the screen is your black top and your beard all come together, and all I can see are your front teeth.
We're both beard guys, you know.
Right, that's...
So, God bless you, and thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani.